The Chengho fleet was first to arrive at the on-off star. That might not matter. For the last 50 years of their voyage, they had watched the torch plumes of the emergent fleet as it decelerated toward the same destination. They were strangers, meeting far from either side's home territory. That was nothing new to the traders of the Chengho, though normally the meetings were not so unwelcome, and there was the possibility of trade. Here, well, there was treasure, but it did not belong to either side. It lay frozen, waiting to be looted or exploited or developed, depending on one's nature. So far from friends, so far from a social context, so far from witnesses. This was a situation where treachery might be rewarded, and both sides knew it. Chengho and Emergence, the two expeditions, had danced around each other for days, probing for intent and firepower. Agreements were drawn and redrawn. Plans were made for joint landings. Yet the traders had learned precious little of true Emergent intent, and so the Emergent's invitation to dinner was greeted with relief by some, and with a silent grinding of teeth by others. Trixia Bonso leaned her shoulder against his, cocked her head so that only he could hear. "So, Ezer, the food tastes okay. Maybe they're not trying to poison us." "It's bland enough," he murmured back, and tried not to be distracted by her touch. Trixia Bonsall was planet-born, one of the specialist crew. Like most of the Trilanders, she had a streak of over-trustfulness in her makeup. She liked to tease Ezer about his traitor paranoia. Ezer's gaze flicked across the tables. Fleet Captain Park had brought 100 to the banquet, but very few armsmen. The Chengho were seated among nearly as many emergents. He and Trixia were far from the captain's table. Ezer Vin, apprentice trader, and Trixia Bonsall, linguistics postdoc. He assumed the emergents down here were equally low-ranking. The best Chengho estimate was that the emergents were strict authoritarians, but Ezer saw no overt marks of rank. Some of the strangers were talkative, and their knees was easily understandable, scarcely different from the broadcast standard. The pale, heavy-set fellow on his left had maintained non-stop chit-chat throughout the meal. Ritzer Bruegel seemed to be a programmer at arms, though he hadn't recognized the term when Ezer used it. He was full of the schemes they could use in coming years.
"'Tas been done often enough before, don't you know? Get 'em when they don't know technology, or haven't yet rebuilt it," said Bruegel, concentrating most of his efforts away from Ezer on old Fam Trinley. Bruegel seemed to think that apparent age conferred some special authority, not realizing that any older guy down among the juniors must truly be a loser. Ezer didn't mind the being ignored. It gave him an opportunity to observe without distraction. Fam Trinley seemed to enjoy the attention. As one programmer at arms to another, Trinley tried to top everything the pale blonde fellow said, in the process yielding confidences that made Ezer squirm. One thing about these emergents, they were technically competent. They had ram ships that traveled fast between the stars. That put them at the top in technical savvy, and this didn't seem to be decadent knowledge. Their signal and computer abilities were as good as the Chengho's, and that, Vin knew, made Captain Park's security people more nervous than mere emergent secrecy. The Chengho had culled the golden ages of 100 civilizations. In other circumstances, the emergent's competence would have been cause for honest mercantile glee. Competent and hard-working, too. Ezer looked beyond the tables, not to ogle, but this place was impressive. The living quarters on Ram Scoop ships were generally laughable. Such ships must have substantial shielding and moderate strength of construction. Even at fractional light speed, an interstellar voyage took years, and crew and passengers spent most of that time as corpsicles. Yet the emergents had thawed many of their people before living space was in place. They had built this habitat and spun it up in less than 8 days, even while final orbit corrections were being done. The structure was more than 200 meters across, a partial ring, and it was all made from materials that had been lugged across 20 light years. Inside, there was the beginning of opulence.
The overall effect was classicist in some low degree, like early solar habitats before life support systems were well understood. The emergents were masters of fabric and ceramics, though Easer guessed that bio-arts were non-existent. The drapes and furniture contrived to disguise the curvature in the floor. The ventilator breeze was soundless and just strong enough to give the impression of limitless airy space. There were no windows, not even spin-corrected views. Where the walls were visible, they were covered with intricate manual artwork. Oil paintings? Their bright colors gleamed, even in the half-light. He knew Trixia wanted a closer look at those. Even more than language, she claimed that native art showed the inner heart of a culture. Vin looked back at Trixia, gave her a smile. She would see through it, but maybe it fooled the emergents. Easer would have given anything to possess the apparent cordiality of Captain Park, up there at the head table, carrying on such an affable conversation with the emergents Tomas now. You'd think the two were old school buddies. Vin settled back, listening not for sense, but for attitude. Not all the emergents were smiling, talkative types. The redhead at the front table, just a few places down from Tomas now, she'd been introduced, but Vin couldn't remember the name. Except for the glint of a silver necklace, the woman was plainly, severely dressed. She was slender, of indeterminate age. Her red hair might have been a style for the evening, but her unpigmented skin would have been harder to fake. She was exotically beautiful, except for the awkwardness in her bearing, the hard set of her mouth. Her gaze ranged up and down the tables, yet she might as well have been alone. Vin noticed that their hosts hadn't placed any guest beside her. Trixia often teased Vin that he was a great womanizer, if only in his head. Well, this weird-looking lady would have figured more in Easer Vin's nightmares than in any happy fantasy. Over at the front table, Tomas now had come to his feet. The servers stepped back from the tables. A hush fell upon the seated emergents and all but the most self-absorbed traders. Time for some toasts to friendship between the stars, Easer muttered. Bonsall elbowed him, her attention pointedly directed at the front table. He felt her stifle a laugh when the emergent leader actually began with, "Friends, we are all a long way from home." He swept his arm in a gesture that seemed to take in the spaces beyond the walls of the banquet room. "We've both made potentially serious mistakes. We knew this star system is bizarre. Imagine a star so drastically variable that it nearly turns itself off for 215 years out of every 250. Over the millennia, astrophysicists of more than one civilization tried to convince their rulers to send an expedition here ways. He stopped, smiled. Of course, till our era, Taz expensively far beyond the human realm. Yet now, it is the simultaneous object of two human expeditions. There were smiles all around, and the thought, what wretched luck. Of course, there is a reason that made the coincidence likely. Years aback, there was no driving need for such an expedition. Now we all have a reason. The race you call the Spiders. Only the third non-human intelligence ever found. And in a planetary system as bleak as this, such life was unlikely to have arisen naturally. The Spiders themselves must be the descendants of starfaring non-humans, something humankind had never encountered. It could be the greatest treasure that Chang-Ho had ever found, all the more so because the present Spider civilization had only recently rediscovered radio. They should be as safe and tractable as any fallen human civilization. Now gave a self-deprecating chuckle and glanced at Captain Park.
Till recently, I had not realized how perfectly our strengths and weaknesses, our mistakes and insights, complemented each other. You came from much farther away, but in very fast ships already built. We came from nearer, but took the time to bring much more. We both figured most things correctly.
Telescope arrays had watched the on-off star for as long as humankind had been in space. It had been known for centuries that an Earth-sized planet with life signature chemistry orbited the star. If Onof had been a normal star, the planet might have been quite pleasant, not the frozen snowball it was most of the time. There were no other planetary bodies in the Onof system, and ancient astronomers had confirmed the moonlessness of the single world in the system. No other terrestrial planets, no gas giants, no asteroids, and no cometary cloud. The space around the Onof star was swept clean. Such would not be surprising near a catastrophic variable, and certainly the Onof star might have been explosive in the past. But then how did the one world survive? It was one of the mysteries about the place. All that was known and planned for. Captain Park's fleet had spent its brief time here in a frantic survey of the system, and in dredging a few kilotons of volatiles from the frozen world. In fact, they had found four rocks in the system. Asteroids, you might call them, if you were in a generous mood. They were strange things, the largest about 2 kilometers long. They were solid diamond. The Trilander scientists nearly had fistfights trying to explain that. But you can't eat diamonds, not raw anyway. Without the usual mix of native volatiles and ores, fleet life would be very uncomfortable indeed. The Dem emergents were both late and lucky. Apparently they had fewer science and academic specialists, slower starships, but lots and lots of hardware. The emergent boss gave a benign smile and continued, "There really is only one place in all the on-off system where volatiles exist in any quantity, and that is on the spider world itself." He looked back and forth across his audience, his gaze lingering on the visitors. "I know it's something that some of you had hoped to postpone till after the spiders were active again, but there are limits to the value of lurking, and my fleet includes heavy lifters. Director Reynolt," aha, that was the redhead's name, "agrees with your scientists that the locals never did progress beyond their primitive radios. All the spiders are frozen deep underground, and will remain so till the on-off star relights." In about a year, the cause of on-off cycle was a mystery, but the transition from dark to bright repeated, with a period that had drifted little in 8,000 years. Next to him at the front table, S.J. Park was smiling too, probably with as much sincerity as Tomas now. Fleet Captain Park had not been popular with the Triland Forestry Department. That was partly because he cut their pre-flight time to the bone. Even when there had been no evidence of a second fleet, Park had all but fried his ramjets in a delayed deceleration, coming in just ahead of the emergence. He had a valid claim to first arrival, and precious little else. The diamond rocks, a small cache of volatiles. Until their first landings, they hadn't even known what the aliens really looked like. Those landings, poking around monuments, stealing a little from garbage dumps, had revealed a lot, which now must be bargained away.
"It's time to begin working together," Now continued. "I don't know how much you all have heard about our discussions of the last 2 days. Surely there have been rumors. You'll have details very soon, but Captain Park, your trading committee, and I thought that now is a good occasion to show our united purpose. We are planning a joint landing of considerable size. The main goal will be to raise at least 1 million tons of water and similar quantities of metallic ores. We have heavy lifters that can accomplish this with relative ease. As secondary goals, we'll leave some unobtrusive sensors and undertake a small amount of cultural sampling. These results and resources will be split equally between our 2 expeditions. In space, our 2 groups will use the local rocks to create a cover for our habitats, hopefully within a few light seconds of the spiders." Now glanced again at Captain Park. So some things were still under discussion. Now raised his glass. "So, a toast to an end of mistakes and to our common undertaking. May there be a greater focus in the future."